and it gives you a very accurate way of calibrating with the modulator. And that half a sync pulse white that you just described, if I rolled the picture the right way so I'm looking at the sync, I would see a short section of a white stripe streak across the screen during one of the vertical interval test signal intervals, so to speak. Go ahead.
Correct. Typically, it will be transmitted on line number 10, which is no picture. Picture Oxley's Gust and NTSC on line 21.
So I'd have to roll the picture to see it, but I would see a maximum white streak during a portion of the horizontal scan in the area of the vertical blanking interval. Is that true?
You'll actually see it within the sync. You would actually have to put your monitor in cross pulse to see it, because it's not there for the duration of the line. It's only there for the duration of the sync pulse, which is about 10 microseconds. So you would actually have to look at the horizontal blanking, and you would see it in the vertical blanking. Typically on a broadcast monitor, we have something called a pulse cross position, which actually rolls the vertical blanking into the middle of the picture and rolls the horizontal blanking into the middle of the picture, and it becomes a cross pulse.
Aha! So that's called, did you call it the cross pulse mode of video monitoring?
Correct. You will find on most commercial monitors, on monitors, not TV sets, there's a button that allows you to either shift the horizontal blanking into the middle of the picture or the vertical blanking into the middle of the picture, or both. And we call that cross pulse.
Interesting. Does digital television have anything like that? I'm guessing the answer might be no.
Well, in essence, the answer is actually yes, so to speak. It depends upon what we're talking about, because there's different forms of it. In the horizontal and the vertical blanking intervals, we have something called the HANK, or the horizontal ancillary data section, and the BANK, which is the vertical ancillary data section, which actually can have a lot of data and a lot of information. That's where the closed captions are packaged. For some systems, not necessarily the transmission system, but in SDI or serial digital interface or HD serial digital interface, we can also put not only closed captions, but 8 channels of audio, Dolby E. There's actually quite a lot of data room in there, but that's not what we usually transmit over the air. Over the air, that stuff is simply missing. It's not there because we're actually not transmitting a picture, so to say. We're transmitting coefficients.
While we're at it, Eric, something is bothering me. For the last 5 days in a row, over the air broadcast, there is no channel 25-1 and 25-2 from Brooklyn. My RSSI shows 95%. I'm getting a full sync, a pilot tone, but there is absolutely no video on over-the-air 25-1 or 25-2. Are you aware of that? Go ahead.
Okay, I'm actually turning. Cameras, the New York City cameras, a little earlier today, and right now, at this very moment, are they on the air? I'm waiting. No, it seems like they're not on the air at the moment, although they are on satellite.
KC2 QIQ with a comment.
I'll go to Glenn in a minute. When you look at your receiver signal strength indicator, you will get full indication as if the carrier was there. There was just no over-the-air video. Back to you for a check on that, Eric.
Actually, what I'm going to do is turn the other receiver on. Give me a minute, and I can give you an accurate indication as to whether they were there earlier. They were transmitting their traffic cameras and the other stuff, but that's not a receiver downstairs. Give me a minute, and I'll tell you whether I've
I've got signal from them and whether or not they're actually transmitting any data. Go ahead, Glenn.
Okay, Dick, 25-1 right now is putting out some kind of a music video, and 25-2 is putting out, I guess, some, like, street information, showing pictures right now. But there, yeah, there's definitely video coming out, certainly here to Massapequa. KCRIW, KC2, QIQ.
And that's real over-the-air RF? You're not getting it by cable TV?
No, this is over-the-air. This is my WineGuard antenna pointed right at Empire.
Have you been looking at them periodically over the last 4 days?
No, I haven't, Dick. I'm just looking at right now the... I'm looking even at the date on the picture. It's up to speed, so... It's, you know, this is live broadcasting. But I haven't been watching. I just turned it on when I heard you made the comment.
Yeah, Donnie, it doesn't look like they're their usual self. Are you aware that there's been some bad openings lately, Dick?
Post signal is Brooklyn.
Okay. You're getting no signal in Brooklyn, is what I just heard Mel say. And Mel, how long have you been getting no signal in Brooklyn? Do you normally get channel 25 in Brooklyn? That's right in your backyard. KE2EJ, K2KEY, K2RIW.
This is K2KEY. Just the last couple of days, I'm looking right at now at 25-1. Let's see, 25-2. See if that's anything there. No, there's nothing there. Just no signal. Everything is no signal at all. I've never seen any street scenes or anything on that 25 series. I see it on a couple of the others, but not 25, Dick, over.
Yeah, I've always been getting street scenes on 25-2. I've been getting normal PBS-type programming on 25-1. For the last 4 days, I get nothing. I think Eric is not getting it, but by some magic, Glenn is getting it. I'm getting a full indication on the bar chart telling me that as far as signal strength indicator and proper demodulation operation, my converter seems to be happy with what it thinks is a signal on 25-1 and 25-2. We'll soon be hearing from Eric. And how in the world are you getting it, Glenn? Glenn, I presume you're getting the normal signal strength indicator, KC2QIQ, K2RIW?
Yep, full strength here in Brooklyn.
Yeah, me too, full strength. Go ahead, Glenn.
Here again, the television I'm using right now is a Samsung LED TV. And there's no converters or anything else in between. And it's receiving it in full digital mode. I've got no signal indicator. I can give you a hint to the strength of the signal. When I'm transmitting to you, I lose the signal. But the hand key comes back on. And the color is beautiful, and there's nothing wrong with the images, no spotting or anything else. I'm wondering, maybe is it possible that they went or changed something in their video format that maybe is giving heartaches to some older converters, maybe? K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
There's no description.
Yeah, that's what I get also, is no description. Eric, have you got some words on this one? Looks to me like Eric is still checking. That's amazing that you in Massapequa are getting it. I in Huntington with direct line of sight to Empire State Building, not getting it. Mel probably has direct line of sight. He's been getting it. I've noticed this for the last 4 or 5 days. I wonder how many times you've looked over the last 4 or 5 days, Mel. Have you noticed that they disappeared, so to speak? And I'm also a little bit amazed that you've never gotten 25-2, the street scenes. But you have seen the PBS program on 25-1, is what I think you're saying. So for how many days have you seen confirmation of non-signal? KE2KEY, K2RIW?
I'm back. They're on the air.
Huh. What made you think at first that they were not?
Oh, I have another receiver up here. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to... They may have actually reset their PSIPs, which means that you would actually have to force your receiver to scan again in order for it to decode it.
Give me a couple of words on that. In other words, the first time my receiver scans, it has a certain number of precepts, I think you're saying, the way it locks up, and my receiver will always go back to that mode. Maybe I should do the same thing on channel 13. Whenever I go to channel 13, my receiver requires 10 seconds to lock up every time I go there. Not quite sure what the heck's going on. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Hi, K2RIW, K2J. Sorry, how can I explain this? think of it as Ethernet, where there's a header, or think of it as packet, where your call sign is actually the first group of packets to that packet which identifies it. We have something called PSIP, Program System Information Protocol. That's what it stands for. And the receiver, when you first scan it, it not only sees the signal, but then what it does is it captures the PIDs that are associated with it. And if something changes, even though you're seeing carrier strength, it may not see the PIDs for the video or the audio, and you actually have to rescan the receiver, which I'm just about to do on the receiver up here to see if that resolves upstairs, because I'm getting it fine downstairs.
Oh ho, so your upstairs receiver that used to get it is not getting it right now. Is that what you're saying, Eric?
Yeah, actually the receiver I'm using up here is very old. It's about 10, 11 years old, and it's not as smart as the newer receivers that I have downstairs.
Now, at any one time, if I go to an auto scan, it will add and drop signals like crazy of what it's getting at that instant of time, depending on propagation or whatever. I've lined up my receiver, so there are certain channels that I get occasionally. I don't want to lose those. Is there a way I can force it to rescan the PSIP, PSIP, I guess it is, on channel 25, without going through a complete auto scan? I'm afraid of losing what I've got. You might have a suggestion on that, Eric. This is a Radio Shack converter box, KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Well, that's one of the problems of the world. Actually, if you have a later model, I don't know which model you have, some of the later model receivers, of course, actually do allow you to go, instead of auto scan, manual scan, you can rescan a single channel. Depends upon your receiver. Don't forget, digital television was a learning curve, and it took a while for them to learn.
Okay. Let's see, Mel, I wonder if you have to do a rescan in order to get channel 25-2 so you can see the street scenes around your neighborhood. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Oh, by the way, channel 25 is coming from 4 Times Square. It's not coming out of Brooklyn.
So 25-1 and 25-2 are at the same of origin, even though they're the same frequency of transmission. Is that what you're telling me, Eric?
No, what I'm telling you is the tower in Brooklyn that you think Channel 25 used to come from is not where it's coming from. And it's not coming from the Empire State Building. It's coming from 4 Times Square.
Okay. Has there been any change in the last week of where I'm getting Channel 25 from? Over to you, Eric.
Negative. Unless, of course, they were doing work on 4 Times Square, they still have their small transmitter. But there's no way in heck that you could pick up the transmitter in Brooklyn because it was only 1,000 watts.
Well, I've got direct line of sight to them. 300 feet above sea level and another 100 feet of tower, maybe I could have gotten them. Let's see how Mel's doing. Maybe there's a way. I think I can subtract a channel and add a channel manually, one channel at a time. I'd like to believe it's going to rescan if I do that. But I don't want to do the whole scan of everything. Although I guess I could and just first write down all the channels I used to have and then manually put them all back. It's going to be a pain. K2KEY, what are you seeing and how were you seeing earlier during the week? K2KEY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Well, I rescanned and now I don't get 25-1 anymore. And I don't even go to 25-2 when I push it now. I lost that also. But I'm getting 30 channels here. I'm getting a lot of stuff here again. Seems like it added a little more because I think it was 27 channels. Now I'm getting got everything here except 25. I used to get that 25-1 and 25-2 with the street scene. And I know it's gone this week. At 8 o'clock at night, we used to tune in. They used to have that travel program. You know, it'd take you all over the world with this guy, Ian Dix. And that's how I know it's disappeared over.
Yep, I watch him too. Why can't I think of the name of it? What in the world?
the name of that program.
Just let me throw one more thing in there. As the band opens, you'll see your channels come and go, because it only takes a little teeny bit of intersymbol distortion to make it not work.
And boy, do I get that. One of the brand new channels you're going to find when you do an auto scan now, Mel, is what's on truly channel 54 to 60. The old-fashioned channel 2 frequency is now called channel 43, I think it is, D-Star. 43-1 is religious, and there's a 43-2 and 3, which show a test pattern. They're eventually going to be filling it up with something. So what used to be old frequency channel 2 is now being used by this D-Star network, and there's probably a couple of others being added and subtracted in a similar manner. I'm going to have to do some experimenting and see if I can do a re-manual scan, and if not, I'll just have to remember all the frequencies that used to be there. And when if I manually plug back a frequency during a time that the set is not receiving it, will it be programming the right precepts, PSIP, Eric? How does that work, do you believe, on a Radio Shack converter? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Alright, K2RIW, K2EJ. The branding of the TV station has absolutely nothing to do with the actual frequency that it's on. That's one of the things about T-SIP. Whereas that in the days that we were transmitting both analog and digital, like the branding for channel 21 is channel 21. The analog was on 21. The digital was on 22, but the branding would come up as 21. So we had 21, 21-1, 21-2, 21-3. The T-SIP allows for you to put whatever branding that you want. If you happen to be channel 49 and you're transmitting at 54 megahertz, your receiver is still going to show channel 49.
I'm familiar with that. That's why I talk about RF frequency, and I should use the word branding as opposed to displayed channel number, which you call branding, and that's a good word for it. Okay. So what's branded, I think 43 or 44, D-Star network, really is on RF channel 2, 54 to 60 megacycles. And Eric maybe didn't know Mel didn't know that one was there. I'm not quite sure where they're coming from. I think you told me they're coming from Manhattan, so most likely he can get that one. And so with this PSIP setup, part of what goes into that memory, that, what did you call it now, preamble, is the branding. Is there also some difference in the way it demodulates the signal itself? Because I still don't have a simple explanation for why I get beautiful signal strength indicator for 25-1 and 25-2, but I see nothing but a thoroughly blank screen. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Alright, K2RIW, KE2J. If, for example, they've made some changes to their PSIP, you will see a totally blank screen, because if you say, in hex, the 25-1 is pit 31, and the 25-2 is pit 41, they changed it to pit 43 and pit 33, your receiver is just going to sit there and show you black. Now, I'm on the FCC website, and I'm just looking to see what's on channel 2 in our neighborhood here, and I will probably be able to tell you where it's coming from. I think I saw an analog channel 9 the other day. There's a low-power channel 9, and there's another low-power channel 5 or something. I'm just trying to remember. Anyway, let me see what I can find here, because I don't see anything yet, but I'm looking.
You could probably look it up under branding 43 or branding 44. I forget which one it is. Maybe it's 45, but it's something. It's lower than 47, which I get a real 47, and I got a real 41. So it's higher than 41, lower than 47. It's the so-called D-Star, which RF-wise is on the old-fashioned channel 2, 54 to 60 megacycle, and 24 hours a day religious programming is there.
How do you know it's on the old channel 2?
Because my converter
inverter will allow me to go to a manual mode in which it can tell me the RF frequency on one column and the branding frequency on another column. I also can tell it, go to RF channel 2. I can put in a dot first. In other words, when I'm pressing the keys, if I press dot 2, dot 02, it will go to RF frequency 54 to 60, and it says so on its screen when it's doing that. Go ahead.
Okay, I found it. It's WKLP, low power digital. Let's see who owns it. Application info. I have a feeling it's a Dick Bogner thing. I think it's probably on the top of the Citibank building. Broadcasting. Yeah, I think that's one of Dick's companies.
Yeah, what is the branding number on that one, if you happen to know?
They don't usually tell you, because GC doesn't care. Let's see. Based in Corpus Christi. Blah, 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 blah. Frequency, 54 to 60, channel 2, unlimited operation. Effective ERP is 0.3 kilowatts. The TPO is 1.06 kilowatts. Height above ground is 265.5 meters. Yeah, I think that's the Citibank building. I have to dig further to see if I can find any more information on it. And the license was granted on March 8th of this year.
Yeah, and the, assuming the brand now is 44. 44-1 is the D-Star religious channel from Corpus Christi, I guess you're saying. 44-2 and 44-3 are a test pattern that says WKOP, as I remember. That sounds right. So, you found them. Alrighty. Looks like I've got to do some more fiddling to see if I can get 25-1 back, because that Voyager program, or whatever it's called, where Ian Wright and, I can't think of the lady's name, where they go traveling all over the world, those are kind of interesting programs. They're also, from time to time, on channel 21-1, 21-3. They're also on 50-1 and 50-2. These are all PBS channels. These are all PBS channels that you can probably get, Mel.
By the way, let me know if you don't pick it up on Tuesday. I'll call Mr. Kim, and you know, the piece that may be incomplete, that may be why you're not picking it up, where some of the newer receivers they stop caring so much.
Oh, ho. So if I can't get it back, I give you another, in other words, you're saying he may have the incomplete preamble on the... on what he's transmitting, is that what's going on?
Yeah, I have a stream analyzer, but I don't have it here. I have it at work. I sometimes bring it home. I really should buy myself one to hear, but... yeah, there may be something wrong with the precepts that the receiver won't deal with it. Where that a lot of the newer stuff, they don't follow the paradigm anymore because it becomes too much of a problem.
Okay, you've been talking about the PSIP, and you've also been talking about the PID. What is PID?
Okay, PID, Program Information Descriptor, or think of it as an Ethernet address. Actually, think of it as a TCP ID, or think of it as a UDP ID.
Is that where the branding information is put?
Negative. The branding information is in something called the VCT, or the Virtual Channel Table.
Hey, Eric, you need a lot more letters for this alphabet soup. Why are there so few?
You want to know the parameters in digital television? There's EIT, or the Extended Information Table. There's the VCT, which is the Virtual Channel Table. There's the TCID, which is the Transmission Symbol ID Table. There is the EET, which is the Extended Information, EIT, Extended Information Table. There's the SST, which is the System Symbol Table, which also includes the time of day, and on and on and on and on.
Thank goodness this is all being recorded by Mike Perry, KC2NJI. I can go back to amateurradio.tv and play it back. Eric, you do believe in UAA, Uniform Alpha Alpha. Is that true?
Say that again.
Does Eric Spiegel believe in UAA? Here we go. Phonetically, it's Uniform Alpha Alpha. You do believe in UAA?
Well, you're going to have to tell me what it means, Dick.
UAA stands for Use All Acronyms. In other words, speak in as many acronyms as you possibly can whenever you're communicating with your fellow employees.
Well, unfortunately, if you're talking about something where there's a language that's been defined, like in computer ease, okay, TCP means, you know, Transmission Control Protocol, at least people who are familiar with it understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah, but the acronyms do, they have an advantage. They allow you to talk to a person who is similarly informed in very compact, fast speech. That's the good news. The bad news is it has a degree of exclusivity to it. The outsider or the person who's trying to learn the trade is kept in the dark. And there are times when that exclusivity becomes quite uncomfortable. I've been victimized by it quite a few times over the years.
No, I can understand. It's just like in Ethernet land, UDP, which is such an obscure acronym because it's user-defined protocol, which could mean anything.
I believe it. So, possibly you and I have to do some more work on our converters, Mel. And if that doesn't work, it looks like Eric might be able to place a phone call that will straighten this all out for us. And I hear tell the guys that went to Jones Beach and saw the Blue Angels fly, both I guess on Saturday and certainly on Sunday, I think they had a real good show. In fact, a buddy of mine went there with his camera, took some very good photography with a zoom lens, and you can see the high vacuum vapor above the wings of the aircraft doing some of the high G maneuvers. Exciting looking stuff. So what kind of a day have you had so far, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of it here at the beach and just got some sight of what was going on. And barbecuing here and kept busy all day long with all kinds of things, setting up the gazebo and fooling with the pool and this thing and that thing and all. And so it was one of the usual Memorial Day weekends that seems that don't sit down for 2 minutes. Let me let it drop and I'll tell you a couple other things.
Yeah, also give a quick thought. Is it too late for us to tell mailbag information? And it's up to you. Over to you, Mel.
Yeah, I purposely left out the young person because a number of them are going away except for the long weekend. And also, I figured that you see the participation wasn't really that heavy today on the TechNet. So even I had my 10-meter net this morning. It was kind of quiet except there was a band opening on 10 meters. So we had check-ins from other states. I still got some mailbag stuff. As far as the, I got 25 is gone. And it's a shame because we did enjoy, I know we've seen it many times over and over, the travel program, the world traveler thing. But we always get a kick out of that little guy, Ian, you know, with all the places, those exotic places and the things that he does check over.
Yeah, why can't I think of the name of that program? Blank Trek. World Trek. Can somebody remember the name of that program for me?
Globe Trekker.
Beautiful. That's what it is, Globe Trekker. And it starts off with the guy with a great big stick drawing a circle on the sand in front of a beachfront. And what's the lady's name that's also popular on there? Uh-huh. We've stumped the trivia expert. I'd recognize her name immediately, but I can't think of it right now. And she's got quite a fan club. But Ian Wright, interesting guy. He's got a fairly heavy British accent. And, boy, they send him and two or three of those other people a part of Globe Trekker. They send them all over the place. And they seem to have a pretty good time. You get a little bit of a thumbnail sketch as to what it's like to live in those countries under those conditions.
Just told me McCormick.
McCormick, and what's her first name?
What's her first name, you know? Patrice or something? I'm not sure. But our last name is McCormick.
Megan, AF2RF.
AF2RF? Are you telling me she's a ham radio operator?
No, she's not a ham. I'm a ham. My call is AF2RF. Her first name is Megan, full name Megan McCormick.
Yeah, she has a significant fan club. And a rather attractive person who does manage to travel all over the place. Interesting occupation to have. So Megan and Ian, and there's two or three more of them, but those are the ones that those are the ones that we see most frequently. Somebody else say something? Okay. So we're going to skip the mailbag this week, if I understand correctly. The next person on the list, if he's still with us, I don't blame him if he dropped out after all this waiting, would be Mike, KC2WYQ. Are you still there, Mike? K2RIW in the TechNet.
We can go back to the general mailbag, not the youngsters.
Understand, and we'll do that a little bit later. Mike, you there? And let me, there's only one other person who signed in for Steve. KC2MVP, Steve. You've been patiently waiting all this time? K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, no problem, Dick. I'm still here. Yeah, if Mel wants to do his mailbag now, it's no big deal. I can wait.
Well, let Mel make the choice. Let Mel make the choice. You've got it, Mel.
Okay, I promise to answer a couple of questions here. Again, you know, we went through this whole business with the vertical. Now, there's a vertical that's advertised in QFC. You must understand, I've got a lot of constituents here that have a problem. Tenants. What to purchase that has very little, you know, footprint. That
Mel?
Is that comment?
Yeah, Mel, your push button is dropping out 50% of the time. Go ahead.
And that's my fault. Okay, I got a hold of this. I wish there was something I could do with this thing. I got one of these crummy buttons in there that comes off like, it looks like from a remote control, one of those little rubber things. All right, I'll hold it tight. Anyhow, if you look in QFC, let me get the page of the current issue and give us some comments of what you think about this antenna, Dick. Over. Let me get the issue. Hold on.
Yeah, I'll also go and get my issue. Be back in a minute.
Okay, let's all get on the same page. Let's look at comment page. Let's see. Open the cover on the June issue. One, two, third page. Everybody got that?
I may not have the June issue yet. Although I got to check. Be back in a minute.
I have it now, WS2N.
Hey, Paul. Let me see now if it's in the May issue. Same thing. Nope. Not in the May issue. Oh, dear. Okay. It's in the June issue. You should have it by now, Dick. It's a week already. Let me see. I don't think it's in that issue. Should I go back to another issue? It's going to advertise it. Comet. The QSS, the advertiser. Not in this one. All right. It's in the, okay. So, we're looking in the June issue. Do you have that, Dick? Yes, still looking for it.
I got mine a long time ago, Mel.
I've got the June issue. Fire away.
Now, I was going to say, because you usually get it at least more than a week before the end of the month. Go to the third page, comment. Do you have that? Page number three.
I'm looking with, it doesn't have a label, but number three, but yes, Comet and Moldall. Got it.
Okay, now look at it. It says Comet CHA-250B, broadband HF vertical. Take a look at that and tell me what you think.
Okay, it says 3.5 to 57 megacycles with a swerve of 1.6 to 1 or less. No antenna tuner needed, no radials, no traps, no coils. Wow. If you suffer in an antenna restricted area, must manage with space restrictions or you simply want to operate incognito, you will be forced to make significant antenna compromises. The CHA-250B makes the most of the situation, making operating HF easy. Max power 250 watts, sideband 125 watts FM. The fact that it's power limited like that gives me a little bit of a gut feel that it might have an internal resistor. What do you think, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW?
LWA2 JNF mobile.
JNF recognized. Mel first.
Okay. Good evening, Stu. That's JNF, Stu. Well, that's what I'm asking you, because that's the question I'm getting. Do you think of the little chart in there and everything? Length 23.5 feet. This is, I've been getting questions galore, you know, people looking for antennas, I could say, with small footprints. And I don't know what to answer, whether or not this thing will, you know, really, will it work? Or is this another one of these advertisements? What do you think? Go ahead.
I've got a bunch of opinions. Let's see what Stu got to say first. Of A2JNF, what do you think, Stu? K2RIW?
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said a resistor. I saw one down in Timonium, and it looks like there's a power resistor mounted heat sink. Might be a power resistor right above the coaxial connector on the bottom of the antenna. I think I had asked Mel about this antenna a month or two ago. It's my cell phone. Let me just be quiet. I actually was looking for something at my place in Brooklyn. But there does appear to be a resistor in there. And so I have a funny feeling that it might just be a loaded coil coming off the top of a loading resistor. Back to you guys, WATJ and mobile.
Saying that this is just basically a dummy load?
Oh no, we're not saying it's a dummy load. And it makes the point that it's a compromise antenna. And so, if you want a no-tune antenna, or almost no-tune antenna, you want to cover all that frequency range with one single structure that's only 23 and a half feet long. Now, half-wave dipole, let me drop. Half-wave dipole on 80 meters ordinarily would be 132 feet long. A quarter-wave full-size ground plane antenna would be 67 feet long. This thing is only 23. It's one-third of the length of a quarter-wave ground plane and no ground plane radials. Wow. My goodness, is that compact. Now, I've been doing a bunch of experiments over the last couple of weeks with an attempt to make an antenna as broadband as possible using no resistors. And if you allow me to make the radiating structure a very wide metallic thing, I can give you a lot of bandwidth. This is not doing that. Now, if I made an antenna that's only 23 feet long, I don't see any evidence of a loading coil, but even if I get the guy some loading coils, there's going to be a couple of frequencies in there where the return loss is going to be some extremely small number, like 1 or 2 or 3 dB. His worst case return loss looks like it's 14 dB in that curve. That means he would have to have a 7 dB pad, something like that. And that's possible. So what you radiate from this thing in the frequencies where it's designed and tuned, you're going to be one S unit down. But to be one S unit down and to be on the air might be in a darn good compromise. It would be very interesting to, let me drop this. It'd be very interesting to run key down into this antenna for a couple of minutes at 100 watt level while looking at it with a thermal imaging camera. I think there's a high probability the bottom, that black thing that you're looking at, would be glowing on that thermal imaging camera. But if it's only wasting, so to speak, one S unit and gets you on the air,
You're not going to be the loudest guy during a pileup of a guy that's at a DX location. It's not going to solve that problem. But for the rest of the year, do you get on and talk to your buddies, do rag chewing, and have one S unit down in performance compared to everyone else running full-size antenna with the same altitude on that band? That's not a bad compromise. By the laws of physics that I know about, that's what I think is happening. Let's see what Bernie's got to say. Bernie, K2IO, give us your impression on this thing if you know about it. K2RIW on the TechNet.
Good evening, Dick and Manette. For those of us that don't have the magazine handy, what is the Comet model number so we can take a look at it on the Internet?
Very fine. By the way, Bernie, you could use a lot more audio. Your audio is about 8 dB weaker than I wish it was. However, when the beep comes after you talk, it is super loud. So the beep is loud and your audio is low. This is the Comet and Maltol is the name of the company. C-O-M-E-T and M-A-L-T-O-L. And the model number is Comet Charlie Hotel Alpha dash 250 Bravo. I'll repeat that. Comet Charlie Hotel Alpha dash 250 Bravo. QSL, K2 Yankee Oscar, K2 RIW on the TechNet.
Janet.
QSL,
thank you, sir.
Yeah, Stu, you got some words? Go right ahead, Stu.
Yeah, I don't have too much poop on it. The reviews have been mixed, obviously, like anything else. A lot of folks who've managed to get it up nice and high, like everything else, it sounds all right. But I was going to order one. The thing that sort of scared me away was the rated wind survivability of 65 miles an hour. I think I've got gusts higher than that around here, and so I'm sort of hesitating. I don't want to have the thing blow into my neighbor's backyard one day. But anyway, back to you, gentlemen. W-A-T Janet.
That shouldn't stop you, Stu. It would be very easy to put up some nylon rope to guide this thing anywhere along the length that you want to, in which case you would take an antenna with 65 mile an hour survivability, and it would go to 130 miles an hour immediately. So that's not a showstopper.
NY2H.
NY2H. Start off with your name, sir, and go right ahead with your comment. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Good evening, Dick and everyone. There are 63 reviews of this antenna on EHAM. If anyone is interested, EHAM.com. 63 reviews on it.
Okay, that's interesting to know, Lou. And lots of reviews. Give us a few words, Lou. You've probably seen some of those reviews. In general, are people happy with it? It is being upfront and advertising itself as a compromise antenna. At least I think I saw words that said that. Yes. You live in a restricted area. You must manage with small space and so on. In left-handed language, they're telling you it's a compromise antenna. I'm making a rough guess. It's going to be one S unit lower than a full-size antenna on each one of those bands mounted at the same altitude. And to be one S unit down, but with good operating practices, that could be working out very well for a guy in a restricted environment. I think it's a very viable structure. Hopefully it's not super high in expense. So, Lou, what was your impression of the reviews you've read? New York 2 Hotel, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. Out of a total of 5 as a maximum rating, these 63 reviews are averaging 3.5 out of 5. Did not actually read too many of them, just found the link. But if you go on EHAM, actually, hold on one second and I just flip over on the page, because I'm on Echo Link now. It's difficult for me to go on to the other page. I lose control. Give me one second and I'll come back and I'll give you the link. It's not that long of a link. Hold on.
Roger, Dodger, we'll stand by. Somebody else there?
JNF, one more thing.
Go ahead, Stu.
Actually, two real quickies. I believe the costing on that is $480, which guess for some aluminum tubing and a resistor and a coax connector might not be too cheap, but I think that's an approximate price. And number two, I was trying to keep the footprint fairly small and have to start stringing guy wires on an apartment house roof. My shoe size just went up to triple E. That'll be UA2JNF mobile.
Well, if the piece of tubing is only 23 feet tall, if I'm understanding it correctly, 23 and a half feet tall, you'd only have to guy it 10 feet up to give it a tremendous increase in wind survivability. To guy it up 10 feet, bring the guy wires out 5 feet or so from the base. Are you telling me, Stu, that you don't have enough real estate to even do that? Go ahead.
Could possibly do it, although I probably have the thing up on a 10-foot mast to begin with, and then guy it from there, so I'd be guying it from, 15 feet. So I could possibly do it. It may be a bit of a problem to get it out. One, two good shots and two good directions on the apartment house, but it's something to consider.
However, Stu, from your QTH, what else would you do to get on all of those bands, 3.5 to 57 megacycles inclusive? I'll bet you don't have very many other options, Stu. Over to you, Stu.
That is correct. My isoloop basketball hoop antenna only goes from 14 to 30 megs, and so I'm certainly not worried about compromise. I've been compromising all my life on high freaks. So no, I mean, the antenna sounds amazing to give you that window to operate with, and I'm certainly not looking to blow the 2 kilowatt DX stations away. But I guess as long as it works and it doesn't blow over, it's certainly worth considering for us folks here in a good old cosmopolitan Brooklyn. Over.
K2YO.
Go ahead, Bernie.
You would comment.
Okay, somebody else with a comment, but Bernie first, K2YO, go ahead.
An interesting observation. I'm looking at the EHAM reviews that Lou pointed out, and it did average at about a 3.5, but that's because it either got rated a 5 or a 0 or a 1 or 2. Nobody seemed to rate it a 2 or 3. So the comments basically tend to center around the 0 and 1 say that it's basically a dummy load and doesn't transmit at all, and the 5 is people say they got it, they've talked to people in Europe on it and like it. So go figure. I really would have to say that the reviews are probably worthless in this situation, because somebody has got this, it's as if they're looking at two different antennas.
I've got a guess as to what's going on there, Bernie, and that is very similar to what happened with the Lou McCoy situation. When Lou McCoy took a particular broadband dipole that had a great big black molded plastic thing in the center, which was being sold in QST magazine for a while, and it was great difficulty because of the stealthiness of that epoxy that was used in the center. It was very hard to take it apart. People would x-ray it because there were mysterious chunks of metal in there. You couldn't figure out what's going on. Finally, somebody did take it apart and found out that there is a dummy load resistor in the antenna, which means that something like half the power you put into the antenna is turned into heat. But in return, you've got an extremely low visoir across a lot of bandwidth, which in my opinion is an extremely good compromise within the laws of physics. But Lou and other guys suddenly discovered there was a dummy load within a resistor, and somehow that violated the core of their being. It violated their religion, the fact that anybody would put a resistor in an antenna. They completely forgot about that every beverage antenna and rhombic antenna has a 600 ohm dummy load resistor at the far end of the antenna, and it works like a charm. And many of the antennas we build, let me drop, because they're located above Mother Earth, and you don't have 32 full quarter wavelength long radials equally spaced all the way around the antenna. The majority of the antennas that we operate that are close to Mother Earth have a dummy load resistor in that antenna. Your eye doesn't see it. Mother Nature sees it. It's there. That Earth is a dummy load, and it's giving you some peculiar characteristics on certain antennas. So many of the antennas we use have a dummy load. And so I'm guessing these guys that rated zero find out about the dummy load, stick their nose up in the air immediately and say, I'm not going to go there. In my opinion, that's much too severe, and it's misunderstanding the physics of what's going on. So, as a compromise antenna, by the way, that antenna, when you look at the curve, the worst case reflection coefficient there is 14 dB, or 1.5 or 1.45 ISWR, 1.55 ISWR. It averages 20. The average return loss across most of that frequency region is a 1.3 standing wave ratio. That's a lot of antenna for its size. You may not like the dollars, but you're going to have a couple of choices. You're either going to have a very good antenna tuner, and you're going to spend the time tuning it every time you QSY, if it's not an automatic antenna tuner, and you got to worry about, let me drop this. You got to be worried about whether or not the antenna tuner periodically goes into a hang-up mode and it runs its motors and never finds a solution, and maybe you have to do a manual override. But your choices are to use a good antenna tuner and a very low loss feed line into some other kind of antenna, and you're going to pay some significant bucks for that antenna tuner, or to put this thing up. I'm not against this thing. I'm reasonably sure I know how it's doing it, and if I was in that kind of a restricted environment, I wouldn't turn it down, as long as I'm willing to pay the money. Let's see what Lou's got to say. NY2H, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KC2MDP.
Steve, recognized that for Lou. Lou first.
Okay, very fine. Yeah, now I'll just give you the site if anybody wants to just take a quick look. So, as Bernie said, it's eham.net/reviews, that's plural, /detail, /5175. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, that's a good one. eham.net/review/detail/5175. And there you can read all the reviews that average 3.5, even though some of them are 4.5 and some of them are zeros. You can't have a zero that really gives a performance of zero. So some of the guys that give it a zero rating, I think they're falling into the Lumikoi trap, as I call it. To have that much anger over the fact that an antenna contains a resistor. And every antenna we have ever used contains a resistor. Our eye just doesn't see it. Rarely do we have the resources to mount our antenna a zillion wavelengths above the ground, so you're not getting some local ground resistance being added into the RF performance of the antenna. And whether you lump that resistor somewhere in the antenna as that nice tubular black thing with a heat sink on it shows on this antenna, or whether you lump it into the earth that's under the antenna, it's kind of academic. Go right ahead, Steve. KC2MDP, K2RIW in the TechNet.
And to me else.
Rich recognized, but Steve first.
Okay, thank you, Dick. Yeah, I'm looking at the picture here. Yeah, you got the black thing, and then you got the vertical radiator, and it goes through the, let's say for the sake of argument here, the mounting bracket. And at the very top, it looks like they got a plastic insulator. But the thing between the plastic insulator and the black thing looks like it's just an aluminum scrap that physically mounted. You know, the picture's not that great, but it looks like it's physically connected to the radiator and the strap there. What do you think that is, Dick? If you can make that out, back to you.
Yeah, the picture I've got, I think I can make it out. It looks like a solid chunk of hogged-out aluminum, giving it strong mechanical support and grounding. Since this antenna has no ground plane radials, I think it falls into the category of a Ringo Ranger. Ringo Ranger is also a Cushcraft antenna for 2 meters, or is there a 6 meter version, but certainly on 2 meters. Without ground plane radials, without a doubt, it is launching current into the support piece of fabric that launches it, that holds it up. And there are guys who use a particular length of tubing in Brooklyn, which gives them a null on the horizon, or a near null on the horizon. They think the antenna is terrible. There are guys that use a different length of support tubing, and they think the antenna is the best thing since baked bread. So there are people who just love Ringo Ranger, and there are people who absolutely hate it. And the manufacturer was not smart enough to tell you that these are the recommended lengths of the tubing you mounted with, because it's launching current into that tubing, and so you could say the other half of the dipole, to make it simplistic, is the structure that you mounted on. This thing has that characteristic. As I see it, there's almost no way in hell that this thing has an electrical half wavelength in that piece of tubing. I don't see any obvious loading coils, frequency meandering devices, top hat capacitors, and so on. So electronically, the antenna is not a half wave long. It's a quarter wavelength long at those lower frequencies. Therefore, in my mind, it's got to be launching current into the support structure. Therefore, the length of the support structure will change the performance. That's the way I see it. Let's see what Rich has got to say. N2EO. Would the guys in Whitestone buy one of these? Would Jingles be enthusiastic about it? K2RIW in the deck, man.
Okay, the K2RIW and 2EO. Now, I brought this up before when you brought up that the dummy low dipole, the infamous dummy low dipole that the ARRL did the expose on. In defense of Lou McCoy, what he was objecting to more than what got him angry, as you put it, the extreme anger, was not the resistor, but that company was in Florida and they were selling that, they were marketing that antenna as an automatic antenna, an electronic automatic antenna, I forget what the wording was, and they were buying surplus boards and putting them inside the epoxy case. So it made it appear like there was a lot of electronics in there, which there wasn't. Well, there was, but it just didn't do anything. It was just junk. And they were selling it for an inordinate price, like $800 for the kilowatt model. There's it.
Okay, I think I see what you're saying here. There was a significant amount of deception taking place. Now, in the early days of transistorized radios, in many cases, the radio really had five transistors, and it was advertised as seven or eight transistors. And if you took apart the printed circuit board, there were two or three more transistors there, soldered down to the board. They were bad transistors that were not electrically part of the circuit. They were not wired in and doing anything. But you did buy a seven-transistor radio. Yes, it's deceptive. And so I guess you're saying Lou was very unhappy about the deception. And that extra printed circuit board with all the doodads was there to make sure if you x-rayed it, you would see a lot of extra things, and you think automatic antenna tuning is taking place. Although, I'd worry a little bit if it really was electronic automatic antenna tuning, the process of x-raying it could be damaging that electronics. So, a dummy load resistor is not a bad way to go. It's a hard way to get a lot of performance out of that. I was working on an antenna where across a particular frequency range, I had to have a return loss of an extremely low number, like minus 30 decibels. To do that with a resistor requires an awful big attenuator. And that became impractical without transmitting an awful lot of power to overcome the insertion loss of the attenuator. In which case, I'd rather spend all the extra dollars on electronics that did electronic tuning, like an antenna tuner. So, because of the size of the great big black thing, which I doubt it's a loading coil, and even if it is a loading coil, it's a loading coil with distributed resistance. For all we know, it's a loading coil made out of nichrome wire, very similar to what happened. Let me drop the very early rubber duck antennas were wound with nichrome wire, and they gave reasonably good standing wave ratio. But rubber duck antennas got a bad name pretty fast as being a low-gain antenna. Properly constructed, a rubber duck is capable of a lot of performance, until later versions were made out of more copper-like materials. And then you ran into the problem of when you buy a rubber duck for your handy-talkie, the guy selling you the rubber duck will ask you what brand name and model number of handy-talkie you're using, because there's a different size rubber duck for each one of them, even though they're all built for the exact same band, because each manufacturer has his own way of doing internal impedance matching. Whereas when they were back in the heavily resistive type material, it didn't matter. So, I'm not against it. It does sound a little bit pricey, but for a guy in a restricted environment, I think it's a way to go. By way of reading those ratings in EHAM, a person knows a little bit more about what he's going to encounter. And I wouldn't completely count the guy who gave it a zero rating because he didn't like it, because he wasn't smart enough to use the right length of mounting tubing, or he found out